You are listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham.
Law and order have broken down in Detroit, Michigan.
We looked down 12th Street and all you seen was fire and smoke.
Oh, the Motor City is burning.
Those shots are being fired on 12th Street.
Chaos. Chaos. Just everywhere. People everywhere.
I said, this can't be happening to my city.
The madness overtook everything.
Anything in the world, Johnny can do.
During the 1967 Detroit uprising, the people being kept on the buses and in city garages and other kind of cramped makeshift jails, they all eventually made it to the courthouse. And when they did, Bill Goodman was there. He was a young lawyer. He was troubled by the way that defendants, especially those who were black, were treated by the mostly white judges. Cynthia Canty talked to Goodman about what he saw during the weeks he spent working as a pro bono lawyer for those arrested in the riots.
Bill, you were a young lawyer, and you'd been politically active. You'd represented anti-Vietnam War protesters and police misconduct and brutality cases. So during the Detroit Rebellion, there you went to Detroit Recorder's Court. And we should remind people, that doesn't exist anymore, but it covered, what, traffic and ordinance violations and felonies committed in the city of Detroit?
Felonies and misdemeanors in the city of Detroit. Yeah, it's sort of a combination of 36th District Court and the Frank Murphy Hall of Justice.
Bill, how would you characterize the actions at Detroit Recorder's Court during that week in July 50 years ago?
The actions, how would I characterize them? I would say the judges of the Recorder's Court basically rubber-stamped unconstitutional, widespread unconstitutional practices by the Detroit Police Department, with one exception, that exception being Judge George W. Crockett, Jr., who was a great hero of mine in general and a lifelong friend of my family's, and was in the law firm when I first joined it, as a matter of fact. And Crockett, what happened was that people during the uprising in 1967 were arrested en masse, huge numbers of people, hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people were arrested. They were held in every police lockup in the city of Detroit. Wayne County Jail was overflowing. Detroit Police Headquarters was overflowing. And then they were held on buses in the bathrooms at Belle Isle and other parks. And they were crowded in every possible way. And they stayed there for many days under those kinds of conditions.
I cannot imagine being on a bus, needing to use a bathroom, you know, during that hot week in July.
Or being next to another 50 people who needed to use the bathroom and then trying to sleep. And yes, that's imagine.
And who were these people?
These were people who were guilty of curfew violations. Immediately, the city and the governor imposed a curfew, a dusk to dawn curfew in the city of Detroit. So that when it got dark, if you were out in the city of Detroit at all, regardless of age, you were going to get arrested. And then these people were arrested and they were held for some of them for weeks. And what happened is that they go into Recorder's Court and they get in front of some judge who would say something like, all right, we will accept your plea of not guilty and set bond at $25,000 or $50,000. Now, this was in 1967.
For a curfew violation.
For curfew violations, for basically a city code violation. The only judge who wouldn't do it, as I said before, is Crockett, who refused and said it violates the Constitution, which it does. Excessive and unreasonable bail and bond. And Crockett was, you know, there was a Kerner Commission. You've heard of the Kerner Commission, I'm sure.
Yes.
Which studied this uprising and many others across the country. And they agreed with what I said. The only judge who paid attention to the Constitution on the Courter's Court bench in the city of Detroit was Crockett. And that was the story.
Bill, so you come in there. What are your memories as you first walked into Recorder's Court? What did it look like? What was the mood like?
Oh, it was packed with cops and with people and with lawyers and with defendants. The defendants were packed into holding cells behind the court. They were packed into the jury box. The judge would call their name. They'd stand up, and I'd come over, and I'd say, I'll be your lawyer. You know, me or others who were doing the same thing. We'll be your lawyer. What's your name? What do you do? How many kids do you have? You know, do you own a home? All of those kinds of questions. We're trying to do an interview at the same time this person is standing up in front of a judge, you know, having his bond hearing held, an arraignment. So my recollections were total exhaustion on everybody's part, frustration, anger. and generally a sense of racism, because all the cops and almost all the judges, again with the exception of Crockett, were white, and all of the defendants, everybody who was standing there was black. And most lawyers were white, by the way.
And how were you and the lawyers who were there, you know, trying to represent all of these people, how were you treated?
Yeah, you know, like we were a little bumps that the judges and the system and the prosecutors and the cops had to get past. We were treated like, a bump in the road. We weren't taken seriously. If we said anything about the Constitution, forget it. They fell asleep.
Were you allowed to say, Your Honor, $25,000?
Well, we said that every time. I think you must have gotten a hold of some of my old transcripts from back then. I mean, we'd say this is unconstitutional. It's unreasonable. The Constitution requires reasonable bonds.
And what would the judge say?
Say, no, there's an emergency going on out there. If I let people out into the street, they're going to go back and start burning buildings and looting again. That's what I heard all the time.
And then, so let's say somebody has this $50,000 bond set for a curfew violation. So as you say, people were held for weeks and weeks.
Some people were held for weeks. I think it was more like maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks were the longer periods of time that people were held for.
Ultimately, were the charges pursued or were the charges ultimately dropped?
No, ultimately, almost all of them were dismissed.
Huh.
Unless there was some other crime involved, there might be looting, there might be something else.
When you think, Bill, of the city and of the courts today, what do you see today? What do you think?
Well, I think a lot of the things I thought when I was 27 years old, 1967, I think that, the system is in many ways unfair, but that's not a criticism of the bench particularly. I think many of the judges try to be fair and try to be understanding and compassionate, and many of the officers as well do, I think, now. But I think that our society is geared in a way that the people who get charged with crimes and the people who get held in jail and the people who can't make bond are poor people and are black people. That's what I think.
Bill, when you think of the chaos of that week and so many people that you saw, so many cases, are there any cases that really still stick in your mind and heart all this time later?
Well, there are a lot of cases that arose afterwards that stick in my mind, certainly the New Bethel Church case in which Crockett was involved, which my colleagues Ken Cockrell and Chuck Ravitz were involved. But from that period, yes, I remember one particular young man who was a teenager at the time who was shot in the back while he was inside a store without any provocation whatsoever, named Albert Wilson. He was shot by a Detroit police officer, and he was paraplegicized by getting shot in the back. And we sued the city of Detroit for Albert Wilson and got a remarkable judgment for that period of time.
Do you feel hopeful about Detroit? I mean, do you feel that the city has made some kind of progress since July of 67?
Yes. Certainly, there has been some progress in the sense that we now have black public officials getting elected to office, including the mayor of the city, formerly the mayor of the city of Detroit, not right now, but we have elected a black mayor. After the 1967 uprising, the Detroit Police Department came down very hard on ordinary citizens in Detroit and felt that they were at war. I think the Detroit Police Department felt that it was at war with the black community. And that's when stress started, in which one after another, relatively innocent black people on the street were shot in the back by Detroit police officers who claimed that they were being robbed. Now, after that, Coleman Young was elected mayor, and I think he did, to some extent, end discrimination in hiring in the Detroit Police Department. To some extent, he reduced racism in that department, which was extreme. So, and of course, we now have judges who I think many of whom are first rate, which is not what I felt in 1967. So I see some improvement in that respect. But in the way in which society now shapes the criminal law system and prisons and fails to educate so many, I think we've gone backward.
Bill Goodman, we want to thank you so much for sharing your memories and being with us today and clearly keeping up the fight 50 years later.
I've tried.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.